I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, today the forecast predicts a high of 101 degrees in San Antonio, but in some parts of town it will be even hotter due to urban heat islands, and many people have no refuge from the heat. Outdoor workers, the unhoused, some who don't have or can't afford to run an AC. This extreme heat is beating down on their health, possibly accelerating aging and causing heat-related deaths. And later on The Source, District 10 Councilmember Mark White says Project Marvel does not need a second vote. And he says Mayor Gina Ortiz-Jones is out of bounds on her talking points about the Spurs' new arena. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source. But first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Extreme heat is becoming harder to escape and increasingly dangerous. Hot weather is now the deadliest weather catastrophe on the planet, worse than hurricanes and tornadoes. Around the world, heat waves are lasting longer, reaching higher temperatures and occurring more often than as the climate warms. There is also growing evidence that chronic exposure to extreme heat could accelerate biological aging, but the risks are not evenly distributed. In San Antonio, researchers are finding in some of the most dangerous temperatures are inside older homes in low-income neighborhoods where inadequate insulation and air conditioning can allow indoor temperatures to reach as high as 120 degrees. Now, researchers are testing practical ways to make those homes and entire neighborhoods safer as extreme heat becomes a growing part of everyday life. What is prolonged heat doing to our bodies? Who are most at risk? And what can cities like San Antonio do about that? Joining us are Jeffrey Howard, professor of public health at the University of Texas at San Antonio. And Professor Howard, welcome to The Source.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate you bringing this topic to your audience.
And also with us is Kristen E. Brown, professor of environmental engineering at UT San Antonio's Kesley College of Engineering and Integrated Design. And Kristen Brown, welcome to The Source. Good to have you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
So, Jeffrey Howard, I mean, San Antonio, it gets hot. You grew up here, you know it gets hot. So are we really in danger because of the heat that we're having in San Antonio?
Yeah, great leadoff question. The short answer is I think yes. Certainly, you know, this is it's no surprise to people who live here that it gets hot. But I think what's happening is that there's growing evidence in the scientific literature just how dangerous repeated exposure to extreme heat can be. And as we see that the number of extreme heat days continues to increase over time, that just means that the risk is growing. And so I think that it's really important for people to be aware just how risky it is. In fact, one study that was published last year estimated that the risk of extreme heat exposure was comparable to that of smoking and extreme alcohol consumption. So it's a risk factor for aging and chronic disease that's similar to those kinds of known risk factors.
For a lot of people, their exposure to extreme heat is when they walk out their front door. Oh, it's hot. Let me get into my air-conditioned car. Then I drive and I get to my air-conditioned office. They're not really getting the extreme heat, but we have segments of the population that don't have those luxuries, and those are the people that we're talking about.
That's exactly right. So, and you know, there's folks who work outside, who have repeated, you know, sort of long exposure time to the heat of the day, as well as the unhoused population, who's also very vulnerable to these exposures.
And a lot of people who don't have AC or they can't afford to run their AC, particularly as those electric bills climb.
Exactly right. There are still older homes that don't have, central air conditioning and so forth, or can't afford to run it run it enough to really keep the heat down. So, these are all sources of risk. They're all exposures that, potentially could be mitigated, but just because of the situational context, it leaves those individuals more vulnerable.
Kristen Brown, San Antonio, we know that we have a huge gap in income, and as they say, it's economically segregated. And in those areas, and these are areas that were redlined, they're the ones that are seeing the biggest, what they call the urban heat island effect. What is an urban heat island, and how much hotter can one be than, if it's 100 degrees today, how much hotter is it going to be at an urban heat island in San Antonio?
Yeah, so the urban heat island is the difference from the temperature around, if you went out to Bernie or something around the outskirts of town. It's going to be a lot cooler, maybe up to 10 degrees cooler than what it is here, the studios downtown. Probably that 100 degrees is going to be somewhere in between what some of those more suburban outside 1604 areas are feeling and what we're feeling here downtown. But it can be a, like I said, 10 degree Fahrenheit difference. And then we also have been looking at these sort of kind of mini islands within, where even, closer to downtown, there's still a lot of variation in the temperature between, neighborhoods that have a lot of trees and are maybe closer to the river, and then some that are just very paved. Those are going to be much hotter.
Is that because the pavement and the buildings, they're going to absorb the heat and they're going to reflect the heat, and then at night they will release the heat, and then it just never cools off?
Yeah, exactly. So you have, if you have trees, there's shading. If you have other vegetation, that can be taking some of that incoming.
And they also respiratory of the trees and the greenery.
Yes. Yeah. So even if it's not providing shade, greenery that is just doing photosynthesis and turning that energy into more plant matter is going to be more helpful than asphalt that is just absorbing all of that energy and then, like you said, re-radiating it back. So making it hot even after the sun has set, which is another one of the things that can be really harmful to your health, is if you have where you don't get an escape from the heat.
And so these areas are getting better at identifying where the urban heat islands are. Are able to direct resources to try to mitigate that?
Yes. And that's one of the really cool things about the research project is we've been working with the city of San Antonio and with VIA to try to allocate resources. There's a limit to resources. So we've identified it those most vulnerable areas to try to put in, maybe better bus shelters, or there's cool pavement that some people have seen being applied to help reduce the amount of heat from
lighter shade of pavement. So it's not black asphalt, which absorbs the heat more readily.
Yes. So there's a couple different formulations. Some of it just change the color, and some of it are a little bit less visual. All of the light isn't the light that we see. There's these other wavelengths of energy, but basically doing the same thing.
But just recognizing that this is something that we have control over, our built environment, and adaptations can be put in place to reduce the heat, particularly for the most vulnerable parts of the city. Is that an important step?
Yes, being able to try to do those adaptation measures is really vital.
So we want to hear from our listeners about the extreme heat. Living without air conditioning, I grew up without air conditioning here in San Antonio, and I don't think I could do it now because it is getting hotter. And you call in. We want to hear your stories. We want to hear your observations. What do you want to see done in order to protect San Antonio, San Antonians, and around the world? This is a global phenomenon. Call in 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK, and the source continues when we come back.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In the second half hour, we're going to be joined by District 10 Councilmember Mark White to talk about whether or not there should be a second vote in San Antonio for the new Spurs Arena and Project Marvel. And you can call in and get your questions in for Councilmember White at that time. But right now we're talking about the heat. It's hot in San Antonio, 100 degrees, 101 degrees, depending on where you are. It could be even hotter. The number to call in as we talk about the extreme heat and what it's doing to our bodies, accelerating aging. It's also causing high rates of death in some of these certain areas. You can call in 833-877-8255. So Jeffrey Howard, at a professor of public health at the University of Texas at San Antonio. Well, this idea, because we frequently talk here about hurricanes and tornadoes and they cause these natural disasters cause so many deaths, but now we're recognizing that extreme heat is now the deadliest natural disaster out there. Help me understand that.
Sure. We have a lot more extreme heat exposure days than we have exposure to the other things that you mentioned, just cumulatively. And so the risk is I would say more diffuse than say hurricanes or tornadoes. And when we talk about heat related mortality specifically, there's sort of two ways to try to assess that. One is through cause of death listed on a death certificate, which we know is underreported. And then there's also no box to check off. Basically, if the person that's filling out the death certificate has the necessary context to understand that heat was related in the death, then they can list that as either the underlying cause or a contributing cause of death on the death certificate. But there's a lot of variability in the way that and the protocols that are in place at different counties across the U.S. and how death certificates are filled out, who's filling them out, what their level of training and expertise is. For example, oftentimes it's going to be a family physician who's familiar with the person, but it's not always. In some places in rural Texas, for example, it could be the justice of the peace who's actually completing the death certificate. So, you know, most people don't get autopsies. Most of the time, it's not a forensic pathologist who's actually completing the death certificate. So there's a lot of variability in terms of the, you know, who's filling it out and what the basis of their assessment of the cause of death actually is. There's a lot of nuance in there, but we know that it's underreported because we also do studies called excess death studies, and that's where we look at, we establish a counterfactual, sort of baseline mortality rate, and we can measure at certain periods in time, did the actual observed mortality rate exceed what would otherwise be expected, and the difference between those would be what we call excess deaths, and we know from studying heat waves that when we look at excess deaths, there's a lot more deaths that are in excess of what would normally be expected in that time frame that we observe that are not necessarily listed with a heat related cause of death on the death certificate. So there's definitely a, you know, there's a gap between those two things. So we know that there's some amount of underreporting or under measurement of.
Well, could we do a better job?
Oh, we could absolutely do a better job. You know, there are some places in the U.S. that do a great job, like Maricopa County, for example.
That's Phoenix.
Phoenix area, yes. They have a pretty rigorous protocols in place to assess heat as a cause of death. But not everywhere has that, and not every place has the resources to put toward that. So we could definitely do a better job as a
Well, let's talk about those resources. Kristen Brown, professor of environmental engineering at UT San Antonio. When we talk about making adaptations to neighborhoods that are excessive heat islands, and then we compare that, those investments in those areas to offset to what it costs for public health and emergency treatment. What does the math look like?
So it is kind of an ongoing problem in terms of doing that math of we need the better numbers of exactly, you know, how many deaths you can attribute to a specific heat event. But we do know that, you know, adding in these, you know, this chronic addition and additional deaths does affect people's health that can have economic effects, especially we have a lot of workers that are getting exposed as part of their job. And if that is causing them health effects, that's going to mean they're not able to contribute to do the tasks that they need, which can, you know, slow down how fast our roads get fixed or our buildings get built. And so there are a lot of economic effects to the system that can happen if we don't put in place these safety measures. And that can be as easy as making sure everyone takes breaks. Don't just tough it out and, you know, make sure you're taking breaks. And then doing this, you know, making sure that there's shade, trying to put different materials on roadways and roofs. So if you are looking to do something like your roof, next time you upgrade it, look into cool roofing options. And, you know, that can also really affect your personal bills in terms of air conditioning. Air conditioning can be really expensive, even if you have central air, which again, we've got all these nice historic homes in San Antonio that don't always, even if you have it, being able to run air conditioning to cool your house when it's over 100 outside is expensive. And so you can get payback from, you know, putting on a cool roof that's going to lower your air conditioning
bills. Double pane windows.
Years. Exactly.
But that takes investment. That's, you know, yes. Not everyone can do that. So Jeffrey Howard, let's talk about the impact on people's bodies and just the wear and tear. So if you're outside, even if you're doing athletics outside, I wonder about the impact on the kidneys and how you know, you want to drink a lot of water or whatever, but still, it seems like that's an organ in the body that's really going to really take a lot of wear and tear with a lot of heat. And then that could have, you know, a cascade effect throughout the bodies. Is that something that should be paying attention to?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the kidney is one organ that is potentially at risk from repeated exposure. You know, and it's one of the reasons that proper hydration is really key.
And if someone's already dealing with things like type 2 diabetes, then they're already at risk.
Exactly. That just adds to the vulnerability and the cumulative impact. The you know, there's sort of a complicated set of mechanisms that we think are at play. And it has to do with one has to do with the way that heat can impact the
dehydration and things like
through
that.
Through dehydration, I mean, that's one big problem that's very acute. But from a more chronic standpoint, you know, repeated exposure can actually lead to issues with DNA replication when cells are dividing, when cells are replicating, there can actually be
So the proteins are not being folded correctly.
Exactly. There's larger chances for there to be errors in that. And so that can accumulate over time. And that's one of these mechanisms that we call accelerated aging. It essentially ages you biologically faster than you would otherwise age.
So Kristen, I see a lot of workers outside these days are wearing more like almost like bright clothing, almost fluorescent, almost, you know, does that help?
That is, I don't know that much about the fluorescent clothing specifically, but just the underlying physics, you know, anything that's reflecting more light away from you is going to mean that that energy is not hitting you. So if you think about the stuff coming in from the sun is energy that can be light or that can be heat. And so if it's going away as light, that means it's not being absorbed as heat.
Right. And I see tents being set up, palapas, shades being put up temporarily for workers who are doing things. But that's not required. I mean, that's just something that people are doing in order to protect the workers. But there are no OSHA requirements to really protect people from these, from the impact of the heat, are there?
The current regulations protecting workers from heat are very limited. There are lots of researchers trying to get enough data to be able to push those regulations.
I know the postal workers are demanding better protections.
Yes. So that's kind of one of the things we have to do. You were asking about those economic calculations. Sometimes we need to be able to show enough data that there really are these harms and we could have benefits before you can get something to be required.
Right. And so, I mean, what's the takeaway message that you want people to have, Jeffrey Howard?
Yeah, I think the takeaway is that it's really important to be aware of your own surroundings, your environment, what you're being exposed to. So if you're spending time in the heat, be sure to take precautions. Make sure you have water. Make sure you can take periodic breaks. Get out of the direct sunlight when you can. It's obviously cooler in the shade. So the more you can take those breaks and get, you know, some relief from the
Some people would say these are common sense
things. These are common sense things.
But still, you may have some overseer telling you, get back to work.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Other things to kind of be aware of just that are potentially warning signs. You know, if you're outside and it's hot, you're going to start perspiring. But if you're perspiring really heavily and you start feeling clammy, if you feel like your heart is racing, if you start to get a headache or feel lightheaded, those are signs of heat exhaustion. And so if you, just for individuals to be aware of these signs, if you start feeling that way, it's really important to get out of the heat.
What's something that Maricopa County, Phoenix, that we should be doing here in San Antonio, Bexar County?
Yeah, I think one thing is that they identify cases that are where heat is suspected to have played a role, and they do an investigation. So they've devoted resources to, you know, have personnel to actually, they will go out and investigate these suspected heat deaths to try to be more precise in their assessment of what caused the death. And so I think, you know, that's just one thing that they do. You know, they have a very rigorous protocol that's in place with their medical examiner's office.
So we need better documentation in order to try to get the resources in order to at least deal with this. And,
yes.
And Kristen Brown, we're going to have, is this going to get worse? More hot, more 100 degree days?
Probably. So last month was the hottest month for kind of the lower 48 of the United States ever. The last 3 years are the warmest 3 years in history. So it definitely is getting worse. And so, you know, even if you grew up being told, oh, shake it off, it is hotter now. And so you do need to take that really seriously. It is a bigger problem.
Right. And last word, Jeffrey Howard. Just more hot days. We're counting up to 100 degree days. They are adding up.
They are definitely adding up. And unfortunately, there's no indication that they're going to slow.
We keep dumping carbon into the atmosphere.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I want to thank you both letting us know that we need to take care of each other. We need to be aware of our environment. We need to think about the most vulnerable in our community who are really taking the heat directly on them. It's beating them down, and we can do better. Jeffrey Howard, professor of public health at the University of Texas at San Antonio, and Kristen Brown, professor of environmental engineering at UT San Antonio. Thank you both.
Support for TPR comes from UT San Antonio, offering degree programs and research focused on workforce development, student success, and health innovation across Texas. UTSA.edu. UT San Antonio, the University of Ambition.